Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Wow.
Japan podcast, probably the best way of learning about life in Japan without actually being in Japan. I'm your host, Chris Broad, and we're joined as always by top London radio DJ and certified Japanophile, Mr. Pete Donaldson. Pete, how are you doing?
I'm good. Burpee, turns out.
Well, we don't want that on this podcast.
No.
People around the world don't deserve to hear that.
Off air, I did a burp, and Chris said, just before we started recording, Chris said, have you just been sick? So clearly, my burp
was horrible.
My burp was throaty. I'm fine, I'm just having a... well, the problem is, don't start your day with a can of Diet Fanta. That's my only advice, I think.
Tip of the
very,
day.
Very gassy.
How are you doing, though?
I'm good. Yeah, it's another warm day. It's another warm day in London. I'll let them through the curtain on this one. We are pre-recording this slightly earlier than usual because we are now in Tokyo together, I do believe.
Yes, in the future.
In the future, so you'll be hearing that. Hopefully, we'll record some stuff while we're out there, and maybe you'll hear a couple of podcasts on location, which is very exciting. See me eating. Coolish. Hear me eating coolish while recording a podcast. Delicious.
And see it in 4K on the Abroad in Japan channel. To be fair, I know what's going to happen. You're going to come over and we're going to have loads of great ideas about what we're going to do.
Right.
And then we'll probably just not do it and we'll get drunk and eat yakitori chicken and that'll be it. That's literally what's going to happen. I know.
Yeah, one of us is on holiday. That's all I'm saying.
Certainly not me. I'm not in a good mood today, though, Pete.
Why?
I need you to cheer me up.
What's happened?
So, in Japan, every 3 years, you need to redo your driving license.
What?
I don't know why this is. It's rubbish. I went to go and rent a car the other day, because I don't have a car, because I live in the city. Mm. I went to go and rent a car, and literally, just as I was about to get the keys, the woman looked at my driver's license and went, oh, it's expired by a month. And I was really awkward. I looked at my driver's license, then up at her, and I think I just went, shit. And then she stood there in silence, and I didn't know what to do. And then I didn't get the keys, and I sort of walked out, and my day was in ruins. But then I had to go and get my driver's license, and I haven't done it yet. I can't be bothered, because I remember what it was like 3 years ago, the last time I did it.
Have you got to do
basically,
a little test?
Basically, you have to... Well, yeah, you have to go and... do loads of horrible paperwork in this building and then you have to go and sit and listen to some person talk for 2 hours about cars and road safety and everyone is asleep. You're in this room with like 30 adults and everyone's just on their phones or asleep and it's really cringeworthy and awkward. I much prefer the British way where you get your driver's license and then you keep it until you're dead and that's it. But in Japan... For some reason,
that's why.
You have to keep doing tests and it's rubbish and I hate it.
Yeah, but like Japanese people live a lot older, so I think there should be a system that is when you get to 70, you got to take your test again because, let's face it, Phil LeGreek? Is that what people call him? I can't remember now. Prince Philip rolled his fucking car recently, didn't he? Nearly killed a person.
Well, yeah.
It's not right.
There's been a few... bad cases this year of like elderly drivers running people down, and it's been pretty big in the media at the moment. Most of the, I think, road traffic incidents in Japan are going down,
right?
But amongst OAPs, actually going up, because
right.
the elderly population of Japan is like getting ridiculously big. And yeah, I've nearly been run over several times by elderly people, and I think you were nearly killed on by a motorbike or something when you were in Kyoto.
I think about that every day of my life. I'm so glad I didn't knock her off my bike, or rather, knock her off her bike, because it was 50-50. It was half her, half me. We gave the referee a decision to make, as they call it in the football fraternity. Yeah, not ideal. And if she'd have fallen off, she would have really hurt herself because she was quite old. But we were two people in the middle of Kyoto shouting Daijoubu desu ka? Daijoubu desu ka? At each other, and we were both very much daijoubu, and for that I thank her and me.
I remember hearing a scream and turning around, and you were just going daijoubu, daijoubu, daijoubu. And the woman was just sort of confused and bemused. And was she on a motorbike or a bicycle?
She was on a scooter.
I genuinely don't remember.
She was on a motor scooter, so yeah, that probably saved her and me. That's twice I've been run over by an elderly Asian person in the Far East.
You don't have much luck in Asia, do you?
No, not really.
One of these days, every time you come over, the threat of your life is in danger once more.
Constantly.
By the threat of OAP drivers and motorcyclists. But there you go. Yeah, so I don't know what to do. I suppose I'll have to get it at some point, but I really can't be bothered. And I think it's now past the point where I can get a new one and I have to redo the test all over again. And I'm just tempted not to drive now. I just can't be bothered.
You don't really notice it. You don't really notice that it's expired until you actually need the car. It's like, oh, for crying out loud. It's like a passport, isn't it?
That's right. I've cycled the length of Japan. I've climbed Mount Fuji. And I've done all these things. And yet the idea of just walking into a room for a day and listening to someone talk for 2 hours is much more difficult than either of those things. I just can't do it. It's the real challenge.
Are they on pretty constantly, so you don't have to? The thing about anything like that is it's like, oh, there's one at Tuesday at 2 p.m. I'm like, well, that doesn't work for me. Just put it on constantly in a room, and you just go into a room and just do it that way. Just let me get on with it, all right?
Absolutely. Well, one thing, getting a driver's license in Japan is a challenge. Another challenge is sending your messages and stories into us at the Abroad Japan Podcast at gmail.com email address, because it is so damn long and cumbersome. But today we are going to read out your questions, guys, and your stories. We've got another fax machine special. And to kick it off, what have we got, Pete?
We got an email from Sophie from Liverpool. That was awful. Sorry, Sophie. Hi, Chris and Pete. I recently discovered the podcast and I've been binging it during my boring drive to and from work in rush hour traffic. About 15 years ago, my mum and a group of her friends went to Japan and stayed in Tokyo for a few nights. After bar hopping around Shinjuku, they stumbled into a fancy-looking bar and ordered a round of beers. When they asked for the bill, they were charged an extortionate amount of money and questioned it. The manager came over and insisted that they had to pay, and after a lot of arguing, he said that he was part of the Japanese mafia and they would have to pay or else. Which my mum replied, "We don't care, we're from Liverpool." Apparently a group of angry drunk middle-aged scousers is enough to terrify even the Yakuza, as the manager let them leave the bar with a round of drinks on him. Just walk out. Yeah,
fantastic.
Get out of the way. I mean, it is one of those things where you sort of go, I mean, unless there's... If you're being silly and if you've got a clip joint, like, fine, but at least spend some money on bouncers, because otherwise, I'm just leaving, mate.
Yeah, I wonder how often they actually have some seriously dangerous Yakuza in the back room waiting to jump out at a moment's notice. It's quite interesting hearing this story in contrast to the story we had several weeks ago when there was the girl Rachel and her fiancé got scammed out of $4,000 in a similar place in Shinjuku. Could have been the same place for all we know, although they were drugged, in fairness, so it made things a little bit more difficult. But this scam, that's one of the more positive stories I've heard from the horrific Shinjuku scam.
Yeah.
The bar scam.
It's all just a big shame. I mean, this is no way to start a podcast. We need a more upbeat email, Chris.
Well, what do we got now? We've got Wesley. Wesley from the Netherlands.
Okay.
Hi, guys. Love the podcast. I only started listening from the beginning 2 months ago when I visited Japan for the second time in a year, and I really love it. I was wondering something. Chris said something about asking a Japanese person if they had pets, and the person responded by saying, "My cat might be dead." How do you respond to that in Japan? As I can imagine, it's such a weird thing to hear as a non-Japanese person. Either you know or you don't know.
Mm.
Greetings, Wesley from the Netherlands. I think Wesley is referring to the time I asked one of my teaching colleagues when I was a teacher. I remember we were talking about pets, yeah. He was a really nice guy, and he was always very uncertain in the way he spoke about things. There was never any degree of certainty, which is kind of polite form of communicating in Japan. And I said to him, "Have you got a cat?" And he said, "Maybe my cat is dead." And there was that kind
of,
is it dead? Is it not dead? Can we be a bit more specific? Schrodinger's cat. How did I react? I just sort of went, "Oh, right. Yeah." And then walked off slowly. Do you react to that? It's a bit of a catch-22.
Well, the fact that he's mentioned the cat being dead would suggest that that's very much the case. Because you wouldn't bring up the idea of death, would you? So if I was a betting man, I'd say that man's cat is dead. And to be honest, in 2019, his cat's definitely dead. He might have a new one.
Well, yeah, and place your bets. Is the cat dead or not dead? You decide. Yeah. It could be a good bet. Yeah, it probably is dead, to be fair.
That's not a bad video, actually, finding your long-lost work colleague and asking him, "Stephen," his name's not Stephen, "Stephen, is your cat dead?" And then it ends without actually finding out the answer.
That sounds like a thoroughly unpleasant game show concept. God knows, you never know, Wesley, if you're in Japan, it could happen to you. So be ready, be prepared, just to kind of give an ambivalent response that's neither sad nor happy.
Sugoi!
That's the trick to winging the cat that may or may not be dead. got one from, how do you pronounce that name? Cade or Cade?
Let's go with Cade. Cool.
I hand it to you.
Oh, hi Chris and Pete, my name is Cade, / possibly Cade. Probably Cade though. And I listen to the podcast every day during math class. Today I decided to finally hit the old fax machine and ask a question. My question to both of you is, what part of Japan would you live in if you could choose any location, and why that location? I'd love to know. And thanks for reading my question. Thank you, Cade.
Thank you, Cade. I think I would live in the city of Matsuyama. Do you know Matsuyama?
Where's that, you dick?
It is in Shikoku.
Ah.
I chose somewhere that you deliberately wouldn't know. I've often thought about this because I've seen a lot of the north now. I've lived in Tohoku for 7 years and I'm in Tokyo nearly every month now. But I don't really see the south that much. And the south is amazing. There's lots of culture down there. It's a lot more laid back. The food's amazing. The only thing that puts me off is there are spiders and snakes. Giant hornet bees, because the climate is more like crappy insects, so that's kind of a thing that would put me off. But that being said, I would like to live there. I think it'd be kind of fun, and Matsuyama ticks all the boxes. It's a city with about 200,000 people, maybe. It's quite a small city by the standards of a Japanese city, but it's just across the inland sea from Hiroshima, so you get to Hiroshima easily. It's right at the end of the Shimonami Kaido cycle, so you can cycle across the inland sea whenever you want. And it's just a boat ride away, about 1 hour, from Kyushu as well. Mm. So it's kind of well connected. But yeah, it just ticks all those boxes for me, really. And I think it'd just be kind of an interesting place to be. What about you, Pete?
I don't know. I've not been to many places. I quite liked Sapporo. I quite like that place. Again, if you're going to go all the way around the world, it is very cold a lot of the time. But I've never really fancied really cold climates like Alaska and Sweden and places like that. But yeah, I think I'd probably happily live there. Maybe try and learn baseball, whack some balls in the baseball nets every week. That'd be lovely. I'm visiting a bit of Kyushu this time round, which I've never done before. So I'm looking forward to seeing a bit of that, because I've only really been to Fukuoka and Nagasaki. So I've never sort of gone south from there. So I'm going to try and find the south coast of that, really, see what's going on down there. So maybe I'll have a new favourite town of
so
whatever those towns are.
So you're going to Kagoshima, right?
I've got Kagoshima and also Miyazaki as well. So Kagoshima's the one with that big volcano that's constantly burping out sicky... he's probably constantly doing sicky burps of lava and stuff.
Like you. Yeah, yeah. Sakurajima. It's a really amazing place. Obviously, I saw it on Journey Across Japan. It was my end destination. And, yeah, it's really cool. There's just a volcano throughout the whole day that I was there. It was smoking. Reminded me of the volcano at Disney Sea in Tokyo, because that, too, is smoking throughout the day. But it's real, and it's proper, and it's big, and it's amazing. Yeah, Kagoshima is really cool. It'll be interesting to hear your thoughts on that when you get back from your trip.
Cool.
Got one from... Mike. Hi Chris and Pete, I'm planning my fourth trip to Japan in December. Last time I went in December, I was dying to go to an onsen town, but nothing was available. I literally couldn't find any hotel rooms or ryokans available. I'm going to get started earlier this year. I'll probably book in August. I'd love to hear your recommendations for towns and traditional inns. I'm bringing one friend who's been to Japan but not to a hot spring town, and another friend who's never been to Japan. Look forward to hearing your advice, Mike. Three towns spring to mind, all about an hour's distance from Tokyo. There's Kusatsu, which is in Gunma. You can get there by train or by bus, and that's really nice. It's regarded as one of the three traditional kind of hot spring towns in Japan. I've been there once, and it was really kind of cool. I think there's like 4,000 gallons of water coming out every minute or every hour or something. I really should read up on that, because that's quite a big difference. But yeah, no, I remember it was a really beautiful town, and it's just, you got the smell of, admittedly it's not a nice smell, but the smell of lots of sulfur everywhere, but just water flowing from the ground every turn. That's kind of cool. So Kusatsu is nice, and then Hakone and Nikko, which are both big tourist destinations in their own right. But I think if you go to Kusatsu, you won't find many tourists. It is very tourist-friendly, but you won't find as many foreign tourists. So I think it might be a more powerful experience than stumbling through Hakone and Nikko, which are both very popular. So, yeah, cool. Kusatsu gets my vote.
Is that very easy to get to from the centre of Tokyo? Is it quite quick?
Yeah. I think you get a train from Ueno, and the train gets you to Kusatsu, and then you just get on a bus, and that takes you up the mountain into the town itself. I went there without a car, so... if I could do it, I think anyone can. So, yeah, it's easy to get to.
That's the thing, isn't it? When we sort of, when you got limited time on a holiday, it's only like a couple of weeks or a week and a half, you're kind of like, oh, I'm losing 2 hours here, I'm losing an hour here. It's all a big shame. Sounds good to me.
Absolutely. I think going to an onsen, going to a hot spring is like a must-do thing on your list. And too many people miss it out. Because it can be a bit daunting, because you're going in naked, right? If you've got tattoos, there's always the conundrum of whether or not you can go in with a tattoo. Most of the time, you can just kind of sneak in. And there's a lot of tattoo-friendly places. But, I always recommend it. And I think there's nothing nicer than staying at a traditional Japanese inn, having a really nice meal, and then slipping into a hot spring afterwards and just relaxing. And I remember when I was in Kusatsu, I had a really nice meal. I stayed in the traditional inn, and then I sat in the hot spring for like an hour and a half, just chatting with a friend, overlooking like the landscape, and it was amazing. So, yeah, check it out. Go for
beautiful.
It. Do it.
I learnt the word for a tattoo this week. Irezumi, I think. Irezumi.
Yeah, good.
Is it? Yes.
Irezumi, yeah.
Brilliant.
Irezumi.
I love the things going in my head. Say again.
How did you learn that? Just from a book, or
I think I always sort of... I think it's, if you're going on a short holiday, it's always good to sort of find things you probably might end up saying. So that's why I learnt the word for like bag or tattoo or stop hitting me, please. It's always nice to find, like, work out the words that you might need. So, yeah, that was one of the things, because I do actually fancy going to an onsen lake, putting my feet in something nice.
Actually, when you're in Kagoshima, you can get buried in sand.
Oh, yes, yes.
I did see
a video about that. It was very good.
You look like the sort of person that might enjoy a mud bath. I reckon you'd revel in the hot sand.
I'm a bit
kind
of a pig pen kind of character.
Love it.
It does look lovely, actually, yeah. I wouldn't mind a bit of that. As long as I get a hosing down afterwards. Not going out like that.
Trekking through Kagoshima covered in hot, steaming mud. Probably isn't a nice fun thing. Yeah, no, you should do it.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Mom deserves better than a drugstore card. This Mother's Day, surprise her with a truly special personalized card from Moonpig. Add your favorite photos, a heartfelt message, and we'll even mail it for you the same day, all for just $5. From mom to grandma, we have something to celebrate every mom in your life. Every mom deserves a Moonpig card. Get 50% off your first card at moonpig.com.
Moonpig.com.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
Can I go to Jean Albert Inderfirth? Because this, I'm really loving this email. I'm loving this email. Hello, Chris and Pete. My name is, it might be Jean Albert. Jean Albert! And I listen to the podcast every week. Currently enjoying the podcast en route to university with some new, true wireless earbuds. Ooh la la. Really enjoying this technology of not having any cords. My question for you guys is then, what is the best and weirdest bit of technology you ever saw or experienced in Japan? Because obviously, I'm a big fan of the department store Tokyo Hands, Tokyu Hands, and there is one floor that has loads of like massage chairs and things you rub on your back, intimate massages for the ladies, and all kinds of nonsense going on. But there's this sort of technology you never see over here. You see like these kind of weird kind of masks you put on. In one department store, it might even have been a Bit Camera, which is a big tech store. I saw, basically, I can't figure it out. But basically, it's this massive fridge. Imagine like a big American fridge, right? And and there seems to be space for only one piece of clothing. But you basically put, a soggy suit or some soggy trousers or whatever, and you put them in on this hook, and all it does is shake it back and forth to, you know, aerate her, I guess, or get rid of the horrible stench and the wetness. It was amazing, and I watched it for hours. I couldn't figure out like why it existed though. It seems very decadent, especially because Japanese places are so small. Why would you need a clothing shaker?
Well, you don't know. What came in handy.
Exactly.
Sometime. I can't think of anything that springs to mind. I guess that arcade game, Chochabudai Gaishi, the one where you have to... I suppose this isn't weird technology. It's just a weird arcade game where you have to bang the table and then flip the table over.
Yes!
It's like a physical table.
You never see
sticking
that.
Sticking out of the arcade machine, and you have to bang it. And the concept is basically... I think Chochabudai Gaishi means to flip one's table, and it's like a expression used to refer to when someone just gets really angry. And it's typically the scenario where you've got like the guy comes home from work, sits down with his family after a long day, and the kids are annoying, and he's been up working 10 or 11 hours, and he just flips the table in anger. And so you do that, you sort of hit this table in time to the children on screen being annoying, and then you keep banging it, and then finally you flip it, and then it has this slow motion replay of the table like flipping across the room
with all the crockery going everywhere and smashing into the children's face and out the window. It's pretty graphic, pretty weird. But yeah, I love that. It's quite a unique arcade game.
Well, it's one of those
really see in the West.
It's one of those ones that I saw the first time I went to Japan. I never saw it again. I'd really like to play it. I'd really like to sort of have a look and watch someone play it again. But fascinating.
They are there. If you can find one, it's quite an achievement. They don't seem to be that popular these days. I never see anyone playing it. I'm always the only one.
It's like the... What I like about the arcades is, like, obviously you see arcade machines you never see over here, but again, like the arcade machine I mentioned before, where it's like an elevator door and it's an actual physical elevator door that opens in front of the screen, and the screen is just a normal screen and then people are shooting at you. It's called Elevator Death something or other, and there's also the train ones as well. There's always a new train game to play. The Denshi Go series is very popular over there, and people just love driving them trains.
It's, train simulator. It's got, like, they've actually built a train driver's room, and they've got, like, the big screen where you can imagine, like, you're on the train driving it. It's pretty elaborate, isn't it? It's pretty weird.
It's amazing. I can't figure it out.
Can't imagine. It's a great deal of fun, but worth trying.
Yeah.
Got one here from Chris. Good name. Dear Chris and Pete, love the podcast. Just wondering if you could recommend any places in Japan to go that are a bit off the track or not well known for my friend who's planning a trip. P.S. All hail Lord Pete.
We've answered this question a few times before, and we usually turn up with we can't remember anything, but all hail Lord Pete. That's why that one got in the fax machine, I think it's fair to say. That's why that one's getting read out. All hail Lord Pete. Thank you.
Quick, Pete, think of one place you could recommend.
Kanazawa. Yeah, go to Kanazawa with a ninja town. They've got a ninja town, mate. Get yourself a little bike. Yeah. There's a little rideshare bike thing you can get. A couple of quid, gives you a bike for a day. Have a tootle around up and down the river. Lovely old job. I've done that once and it was lovely. And then I had swollen eyes at the time, which was worrying. Unrelated.
That was the time I saw you, right? Swollen eyes.
Yeah.
That rings a bell. Yeah, Kanazawa, job done. Got one from Paul from Romania. Greetings to you, my favourite British person on the internet. And Chris, what is this? All hail Lord Pete. What, favourite British person on the internet? It's just turning into the Pete Appreciation Society.
This is self-flagellation. This is self-flagellation, Chris. You chose all these.
Yeah, I don't know what I was thinking. Not going to lie, the title was only meant to grab your attention. I like listening to your podcast while following my gym routines, surrounded by guys double my size, which are probably blasting the most aggressive dubstep playlists in existence. And that is exactly why I don't go to a gym anymore. Besides the times when laughter interrupts my sets, I find this to be the perfect occasion for listening to you two lovely fellas. My question today is related to one of Chris's older videos regarding learning kanji. You mentioned learning the actual vocabulary is better done after learning the meaning for each kanji from Heisig's book. How many kanji did you learn before starting to tackle some vocabulary as well? I suppose you didn't learn all 2,000 of them without having any idea what they meant. Also, what apps or books did you use for kanji practice? Cheers, Paul from Romania. Did you ever do Heisig, the book Heisig, Pete?
No, what's the book Heisig?
It's a learning method for doing all the kanji. Teach you how to read the kanji characters, but it teaches you how to draw them and write them, and it teaches you their meaning. So you can look at a character for food or water and know that it's food or water, but you wouldn't be able to pronounce it or read it. And it's a really good book. All the people I know who became truly fluent at Japanese to like a native level, well beyond my level, they use the book and they swear by it, and I use the book and I swear by it as well. Even now, even though my Japanese has gone down the pan in recent years because I don't use it as much as I should, I can still read characters pretty well, even after, you know, 5-6 years, and that's when I first started using the book. So Heisig, definitely check it out if you're learning Japanese. It's a great book. As for me, I think I learned about 400-500 characters before I started learning how to read the kanji. And I remember using the textbooks Genki 1 and Genki 2, and I was just learning the vocabulary from that. And as I was learning the vocabulary, I recognised the kanji characters from the words because I'd learnt them in Haysig, and it all kind of came together like a puzzle, and it kind of just works like that. Over time, it just works. But yeah, definitely check out the Genki books. They're really good. Human Japanese and Human Japanese Intermediate are some of the best apps I've ever seen on anything, and they're really good for learning Japanese. Yeah, any materials you use, Pete, that you can recommend?
There's a book called Rowley's Kanji Pictographics, which is like a way of remembering the kanji. But like, I can't remember any of the kanji, and to be honest, like it's just not important because I don't live there, and you know, obviously I don't read any newspapers and stuff. I do enjoy the only few kanjis I know is like big and man and mountain, but my favourite one is probably prisoner, which combines the sign for enclosed and also a person. So it's a person inside a box, which is lovely. Some of them are like, lovely. If you know the original like kanji for the two things that it kind of means, it's all, it kind of makes sense. But then how much use is actually known the kanji if you don't really know how to say any of the things? I don't know.
I remember the first time I could just read them when I was out and about. I used to go running down this highway at night, and I started running down there. Then the winter came, and it was too bloody cold to go out, and there was snow, so that kind of killed that. Gave me an excuse to not exercise. Instead, I sat inside and I studied kanji characters for like 3 or 4 months. And when the spring rolled around and it was no longer cold or there was no snow, I went running again, and all of a sudden I could kind of see all the kanji characters on the billboards and the signs down this big street, down this highway. And it was really kind of this watershed moment for me. It was really exciting to just sort of look around and be able to identify kanji characters. And it's just really rewarding. And yeah, even now I can read them. I'm probably better at reading Japanese than I am speaking these days. but yeah, definitely worth learning. A lot of fun. The only two kanji characters you really need to know are man and woman, because you might have problems if you go to like an izakaya or a bar or something, and you go to the loo, and the toilets are segregated, and you've just got a character on the door. If you don't know what character's what, then you could have an awkward situation going into the wrong one. So those are the only two I'd learn if I were you. Do you know the guy and girl?
Well, we spoke about the male guy one before. That it's a rice field with power, because historically, obviously, the people working in the field would be it's like a square waffle with four quadrants. A Battenberg cake. It's a Battenberg cake on the sign. Is it Ka? It looks like Ka.
Yeah,
it looks similar to it. Yeah,
like a Battenberg cake.
Yeah.
I love
like a Windows logo.
I love learning kanji characters with Pete Donaldson. Just your bizarre descriptions.
It's confusing.
Of the
characters.
Brilliant. Got one from Helena. I'll hand that over to you, Pete.
Okay. My phone just switched off. Just as I was about to read there. Hello to Helena from Austria. I basically absorbed all of the Abroad in Japan YouTube videos and podcasts over the last week because I'm preparing for my trip in July. She's excited. So thanks for all the great content. Thanks. I filmed it all myself. I'm going to be staying in Tokyo for a month to study Japanese, and I've got 10 days afterwards in which I want to check out the other places and maybe go hiking. But I recently discovered there are wild bears living in Japan, since I am, for no special reasons, very scared of bears. My question for you is, how high is the chance of bear encounters while hiking, or if either of you have ever seen a bear in Japan? There's not that many, is there, Chris? I've never seen a bear.
I have not seen a bear. I too am afraid of bears. I watched The Revenant the other day, and there's a rather unpleasant bear related scene in there. But yeah, just the concept of walking around a corner and being mauled by a bear doesn't fill me with much excitement.
Suboptimal.
I am often in the countryside in areas where there should be bears. But yeah, I've never seen one. I remember I was going for a cycle once through Yamagata Prefecture, where I used to live, and I was going down this little road, and I saw bear sign after bear sign after bear sign warning me that it was going to be a bear. And I just bottled it, and I just turned around and cycled back at that
point. Not worth it.
not worth it.
I mean, you could get away from a bear on a bike, couldn't you? Surely.
You could do. That'd be a fun little challenge. Follow-up challenge to journey across Japan. Journey away from a bear.
Yeah.
I remember one time I was trekking through a forest called Shirakami Sanchi. It's this beautiful protected forest in Aomori, a very remote region, one of the most remote places in Japan. And it was actually the time when the North Korean missile flew over. But yeah, I went trekking through the forest and I had a guy with me, like a guide, and he had a canister filled with something. I don't know what. But it was like a bear spray, just in case a bear came to us or came around the corner or whatnot. He would spray it with this canister of... I don't know what was in it. Do you know what's in a bear spray?
It was Tango. It was Apple Tango.
Apple Tango. But what he did do, every time he came up to a corner, he would clap like that, but louder. And that would warn the bear that we were coming. Because what the trick is not to startle the bear. If you turn the corner and there's a bear there and they see you, they're scared, they're shocked and surprised, and they'll kill you, probably. So you had to clap. And I do remember about a year ago, do you remember that time we read out that news article about the guy in Aomori who punched a bear in the face?
I don't recall that at all, to be honest.
You don't remember that? That was the story of the year. It was a guy like on a vineyard somewhere. I think there's a lot of cider, a lot of apples in Aomori. They make a lot of cider. And he was there tending to his apples, and a bear just popped out of nowhere and charged at him, and he punched it in the face, and the bear ran away in fear. So to you, Helena, if you're in Japan, you see a bear, just punch it in the face.
Give a little punch.
And you'll be fine. Yeah, bear punch. But I think you'll be all right. I've never seen one, but they are there. Mm-hmm. And every year some people die. But for the most part, you'll be all right. Especially if you're in Tokyo for a month. I don't think there are definitely not bears there.
No. You could go to Shinjuku and go to Nichome, which is the gay district, and find a bear or two there. And that's it.
Hairy man. Rather hairy.
Hairy man.
We are going to wrap things up there, though, guys. Yeah. Keep the comments, messages and stories coming to abroadinjapanpodcast@gmail.com. We'll be back same time next week. And I think, Pete is going to be with me right now here in the future, even though we're recording this in the past, there should be some interesting stuff out on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube with Pete and I in. So keep an eye out on there. But for now, no matter where you might be out there in the big wide world, have a great week, guys, and we'll see you same time next week on Wednesday. Have a good one.
Bye-bye.
Deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.